Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you if you've had any trance journeys lately. Well, most likely, huh? But you haven't had ecstatic trance journeys likely. And that's what we're going to talk about, special kinds of trance journeys that really are important for healing the earth, for reconnecting us with, let's call it, what counts.
Right, okay, that sounds good.
And so, yes, on the other line here is Nicholas Brink, the author of Trance Journeys of the Hunter-Gatherers, because that's really where it all stems from. So, Nick, welcome to Energy Stew.
Thank you.
This is very exciting. The work you're doing, it's even hard to describe what it is and how important it is for all of us to connect to these deeper parts of not only ourselves, but of all reality. And you've had a life of journeying in ways that have taught so much to you and to so many people that you've done workshops with and have helped find these deeper meanings of life. So how did you get into this in the first place?
Okay. As a psychologist, I began with using hypnosis, clinical hypnosis, where I would go lead a person into a trance and lead them into a healing experience. But then, about 2007, I read a book by Felicitas Goodman who talked about ecstatic trance. And I started experimenting with ecstatic trance. Hypnotic trance is induced by talking slowly, following the person's breath, creating a yes set. It's a verbal type of leading a person into a trance. You've got into a trance in that sense many times. If you're watching a movie and when you leave the theater, you feel confused at first, you're surprised it's still light outside, and you forget where the car's parked for a few moments. While you're in the movie, you're listening to the story, and you were so involved in the story that that other part of your life was forgotten. You were in a trance. Ecstatic trance is a different kind of trance. It's a trance that is induced by the rapid stimulation of the nervous system by such things as a drum or a rattle, a shaking of a rattle. It's more shamanic. And when looking at these two forms of trance, I realized, one person who writes about it is Carlos Castaneda, when he talks about stalking and dreaming. The hypnotic trance is more of a dream-like state where you are seeing and experiencing things that are beyond your five senses. You're not hearing them auditorily or seeing them visually or by touch or smell or taste. They're coming from somewhere else. They're not coming through your five senses when you're asleep at night. They're in your mind. And in that sense, the dreams are a trance state. Hypnosis is more like a dream state. Ecstatic trance is more, in Carlos Castaneda's words, would be stalking. Would be with intent searching for an answer.
Right. So let's say, Nick, let's say it's somewhat like lucid dreaming, where you're really consciously aware that you're in an altered state, and you're trying to fulfill a purpose.
Right. In a static trance, you're aware. Also, in hypnotic trance, you're aware. In sleeping.
Right.
You are aware, but not aware that you're in a trance. But you can be. There is what they call lucid dreaming, where within the dream you're aware that you're in a dream, and you could ask questions about the dream. And so there's several books written. One of my friends, Bob Wagoner, has written a book on this, lucid dreaming. So lucid dreaming is much more like hypnotic or ecstatic trance.
Right. And and therefore our normal dreams at night, we're not in charge of. We are not present to alter the dream in any way. We just follow it. But
in lucid dreaming, you are. You can ask questions. I mean, if with practice, if one of the little experiments, if when you go to bed at night, you ask the question, "Am I dreaming?" And so often when you go to bed, that what's in your mind happens in at night. And so that question can very likely come up in your dream. And when you say, "Am I dreaming?" you would say yes. And with one of the books on lucid dreaming gives that as a suggestion as to how to learn to dream lucidly.
Right. So we have the ability to do our own lucid dreaming without having a shamanic way of inducing it.
And, right. There's many different forms. I think one thing that's important is in the Hunter and Gatherer book, Why Hunters and Gatherers? That was in the very early, there are hunter and gatherers around the world now. But when you think of our own ancestors, you go back from 200,000 years ago up till about 10,000 years ago, where our ancestors were hunter and gatherers, they lived in a world of spirits, a world, everything around them was alive. They related to the animals, the animals taught them things, trees, streams, rocks. There was a real aliveness between them and everything around them.
They could also do these shamanic journeys. They had dances and drumming, and they could go into these trance states and even be closer to the inner dimensions of nature.
True. That's very true. But I think the spirits and their experience with the world around them was that they lived more in a dream state. Jean Gibser, a French historian and philosopher, back in 1949 wrote the book The Ever-Present Origin. And in that book, he points out how the earliest levels of consciousness were more of a dream state. The earliest humans lived more like the way animals live in terms of how they experience the moment. Then as our brain, as our consciousness evolved over time, we began to define, see the world as more magical. That's when we started with intent going into a dream state. With intent, using a drum or using a rattle to go into a trance, and most everybody would do it. Eventually, it became more and more restricted to the role of the shaman of the tribe or of the group. But he believes that everyone had that ability. And when you look at the hunter and gatherer cultures now, they still have that ability. The medicine men of the Indian tribes here in the United States often have these kind of experiences. But what Thomas Berry points out, what's important there, though, is that when we went into Gibser's third stage of consciousness, that of rational thinking, we intentionally started pushing out these things that happened to us extrasensorily, beyond our senses, as being superstitious or magical or not real. That which is real only came to us through our five senses.
Yeah, and most of society has been conditioned to believe that all of that is just fanciful and of no value because it's not logical. It's not in a boxed world. And so more and more, we've gotten away from this very complex reality of nature that we can actually be part of to try to separate it and box it in ways where we actually lose the true essence of it.
We lose the true essence. We lose so much of what the Earth is about. But what Gibser goes to is this now this fourth stage of consciousness, which he calls the time-free transparency. We now can see the magical essence of what happened back during the hunter and gatherers with more understanding. And we're now regaining, some of us at least, are regaining that ability. And that's why he refers to it as the ever-present origin. That origin of consciousness still is present, and now we're recapturing it, regaining it.
Well, yes, and what we're regaining is the understanding of how true it is to be able to move our consciousness into nature, into all the states of nature, into other animal life, into plant life, even into the streams and the wind, and really read it and become related to it. And this is what trance journeying can do for us. It brings us into the consciousness of these deeper realities so we can understand that they are conscious, they are awake, and they do follow really deep principles of life.
And they're
that
real.
But we have forgotten about those. Society today, in its boxed, limited way of relating to life, has boxed the earth and made it as disposable as everything that we buy and look for in life. And you talk about that in the book, that you know, we live in a disposable reality, and we're treating Earth that way, and we have to come back to what really counts.
We have to come back to it. Thomas Berry, he sees that we put ourselves above it. We think as human beings that we're superior to the animals, to everything around us.
And therefore we can use them and dispose of them.
Right, exactly. That gives us the permission to, as we became agriculturalists, we began to control the earth, and we gave ourselves permission to destroy all these natural resources. And then, little by little, over this last 10,000 years, eventually, our churches, our religion began to say, "Man shall have dominion over the earth." I think that was an excuse. That was trying to rationalize the fact that we're allowed to destroy the earth. And so, that idea of having dominion over the earth really, I think, is what has led us to destroy the earth. Now that we,
right.
Some of us are discovering how to listen to the earth through, in one of the very direct ways is through ecstatic trance. I think that's the one thing that really is necessary to heal the earth. If we have time, I mean, there's a lot of evidence that maybe we don't have time to do it, but some of us have the hope that we can recover from the destruction that we've done. And in my book, I think one of the beginning experiences I had is when I commune through trance with the animals. One of the first animals I really communed with was the bear. And the bear was a healer, was strong. And when the bear became my spirit guide, how could I consider myself superior to it? It taught me a lot. And I think that was...
Well, actually, you also had a mouse that taught you a lot. And so here we go from a large creature to a small one, and they each have wonderful gifts to give us.
Exactly. And when they give us gifts, how can we feel ourselves superior? I think that's at least in my experience, that was a very beginning place of letting myself reconnect with the earth and bring myself down from that pedestal of thinking I'm superior. Yes, in some ways we are superior in terms of our ability to think, but that's what has gotten in the way over the last 10,000
years. We might be able to think, but we don't know.
That's a gift, right?
And what's really wonderful about ecstatic journeys is that you're able to see how everything is woven together. You become one. You have it in a chapter about shape-shifting into becoming part of nature, becoming part of, you know, shape-shifting into being a bear and then thinking that way and experiencing life that way, or even experiencing life as a river. Or certainly you have someone in the book, you talk about Fay who actually becomes one with the root system of the earth. And
right.
So in these journeys, once we see how it all weaves together and how important it all is together in life, we start respecting the whole of nature and how we have to keep it together and preserve life in all ways. And so that's why these ecstatic journeys are so super important for anybody listening. If they can find a way to, you know, come out to your workshops or go some, or certainly buy your book, Trance Journeys of the Hunter-Gatherers, and really get to experience. I mean, your book is so full of different journeys that people have had that are really enlightening and inspiring. And it's wonderful to see. Now, another thing about the difference between shamanic journeying and ecstatic journeying is something that you go over at length in your book, and that has to do with the body position that you're in when you mm-hmm. go into your trance.
Right.
And that came from the artwork of the hunter-gatherers who had done that, and then you had a college professor who actually did research with a whole lot of students, giving them different positions to go into these journeys with, and then recording what their responses were to see that different positions gave you different kinds of journeys.
One thing right? I've gone a bit beyond just what Felicitas did in terms of having her students and other participants in her groups experience these postures, is as a psychologist, I'm very sensitive to nonverbal communication. If I have a client sitting in front of me, I'm very aware of their breathing rate, or if they're blushing, turning red, or if they're sweating, or tension in their arms, if they're angry. And I think when you look at these postures, they make so much sense. In hypnosis,
they're very relaxing.
in hypnosis, I use words to make suggestions. But in the ecstatic trance, it's the posture. The posture for becoming, like you mentioned, shape-shifting, for becoming an animal, is sitting cross-legged on the floor with your the knuckles of your fists on the floor in front of you. In other words, your arms are becoming your forelegs. Each posture I look at is really communicating something. And I don't know that these postures were really, some of them I think were passed down from person to person, but I think each shaman found the posture that expressed what he was trying or she was trying to accomplish. The healing postures where you bring healing energy into your body. You're standing with your hands on your lower abdomen. So you can feel your stomach rising and falling as you breathe, as you do your diaphragmical breathing, breathing in a healthy way, and energy, healing energy is coming into your body. One of the death rebirth experiences is you're standing with your hands on your hips. And when I ask clients what that reminds of them, they think of, their mother is angry at them about something. But when they do it themselves, what that posture is expressing is determination. If there's something about me that needs to die and something else needs to be reborn in a more healthy way, it takes determination to make that change. And so that posture of determination sets the frame for the whole hypnotic or the whole ecstatic trance experience. So I don't have to use words. The body posture is defining it.
Right, and that's magical and literal at the same time.
Exactly. That's a good way of saying it. Another posture is for divination, for answering questions. And that posture, you're sitting or standing, but you have your hand up in front of you. in front of your face. And when I ask somebody, what does that posture remind you of? They always, invariably, they say Rodin's The Thinker. They're busy focusing on trying to find an answer to a question, and that posture defines the energy of searching for an answer. And so you don't. So I don't have to sit there hypnotically and say, "Well, come on, think, try to find an answer." The person's posture is expressing that already.
Yeah, you put the hand up, and the hand puts energy toward the focus of the mind.
Mm-hmm. And then there's those postures that are used for journeying into other worlds, whether it's the underworld, the upper world, or the middle world. And the postures for journeying into the underworld are you're lying on the floor or on the ground. The middle world, one of my favorites, is the posture was found on the island of Malta, and it's referred to as the Priestess of Malta, where she's standing, her feet are planted, her one hand is over her stomach, her other hand is sort of pointing to the ground. But the posture is saying, I am here. I am here on the earth. Another middle world posture is the Long Man of Wilmington. It's a big rock. It's a very massive rock carving in England and near Wilmington, where he's standing, where a man's standing, holding his arms out, holding poles, as if he is walking with these two staffs. And again, it's a moving within the earth. The upper world postures are postures where you're not connected securely to the earth. You're lying, typically you're lying on a platform or on the ground that's at a 37-degree angle from the earth. And she found the Lacaux Cave in France and also in some carvings in Egypt. I found them in some rocks, several of them in some rock carvings in Tanum, Sweden, where the person is rising to the upper world, and they're sort of floating in the air at a 30, and it's interesting that 37-degree angle seems to be reoccur over and over again. But again,
that's
you're
important.
Not stably connected to the earth. You're sort of unstable, ready to rise above the earth, and that's for journeying into the upper world.
Right.
So
now
I
want to ask you though. Some of these postures, you're in a position that you have to be very conscious of holding that position. Is that to get into the trance, or after, or during the whole trance, you maintain that position?
Felicitas developed a ritual that she believes, you know, was sort of, it's a generic ritual, but we first cleanse our bodies with herbal smoke through smudging. Then we call the spirits of each of the directions. And I think that is an important aspect of reconnecting with the earth. Rather than connecting with something that's off the earth, like in heaven or out there in space somewhere, calling the spirits of each direction connects us to what's around us.
Well, not only that, in your book you actually talk about what each direction means in ways that I found extremely enlightening.
I think that's very important.
Yes.
East is the sunrise. It's the beginning of life. It's birth. South is the middle of the day. It's warmth. It's growth. It's our growth of our children, growth of our gardens. West is the sunset. It's the autumn. It's the productive years of our life. It's the harvest of our garden. North is the elder years, sleep, death in preparation for a rebirth at spring. So each of the four directions show the cycle of life and the cycle of the day and the cycle of the seasons. That's all related. And
it's
very
common. Right. So the thing is that, you know, there are ways of establishing these trances that you've been very successful at, and have had, and many of the people who have had trances with your leading them have had incredible stories to talk about that are in your book.
And stories don't just happen, though. It takes practice. So many people, the first time they try ecstatic trance, their experience is very... shallow. There's not much to it. But after a few sessions, and I think it's important to do this in a group at first, after a few sessions, And using your imagination, if you're standing in a posture and you feel yourself swaying, you need to ask yourself, what's making you move? Is there wind? Is someone pushing you? And I think it really helps to begin by using your imagination.
Uh-huh.
And that process, it's a learned process. And the more you practice it, the more it becomes automatic, and it doesn't take too long to where it's happy. You start seeing the spirits around you all the time. I know at the institute where that Felicitas Goodman started in Cooamunga, just north of Santa Fe, she was walking up to this point where we greet the sun each morning. It's on a hilltop, and she saw the spirits of these elderly Indians in the area beside the road. She didn't go into trance, but they just happened. And I think as we practice it and as it becomes part of our life, and I do it every day, I do it sometimes twice a day, and it's really become such part of my life that it doesn't take a lot of energy to go into a trance. I could see something and it has something to say to me. And
well, this is very important. We're
beyond my five senses.
We're right beyond the five senses, of course, and we're running out of time. And I wanted people to know how they could find out more from you.
Okay.
You have other books, and Nicholas Brink, Nicholas E. Brink, actually. Where can they find you?
You could go to Amazon. My books are listed there. I have five books now.
Are there any websites also?
I have a website, imaginalmind.net.
Imaginalmind.
Right,
imaginalmind.net.
It's my website. I need to bring it up to date. It's not very much up to date. On Facebook, that's much more up to date. If you go to Nick Brink's books on Facebook, that brings you up.
Oh, good. That's great.
We're going to go to this, the Cooamunga Institute on the Internet.
Well, I can't. We're running out of time, but I think this is a good start for people to find you. And your book is Trance Journeys of the Hunter-Gatherers. Nicholas Brink, this is such a pleasure talking with you. You're doing amazing work.
I'm talking to you. Thank you.
And it's so important what you're doing. So thanks so much for being a guest on Energy Stew.